All right, welcome back. Level one podcast, level one coach podcast, if you want to be really specific. Drew, Mikkel, and today we're going to talk about probably a lot of different things, but centering around something that just happened. But I think there's evergreen principles and lessons that just because it's in the news right now and it'll be gone tomorrow, or honestly, it's probably already gone. But we're going to talk about it, and I think there'll be some value in here. So let me kick it to you, and we'll just get going.
Yeah, so the other day you sent me the clip of Kempe and Fiala on the Kings talking. I'm assuming postseason, obviously post game, but kind of like they were asked a question about something to do with their system, and I believe it was 1-3-1, and like what they thought of it. And essentially, Fiala, who, to be quite honest, like I don't watch a ton of West Coast games throughout the year, so I actually don't even really know that he's like one of their top guys, him and Kempe. I just don't have a great grasp on their roster. But anyway, those guys, two of their better players, and basically Fiala speaking on behalf of the two of them is like, yeah, I don't like we don't really love playing this way, essentially is what he's saying. And it's not exactly worded like that, but that's what he's getting at. And what I found interesting about it was twofold. And we were just talking about this off air. The first part of it is like, I think anytime, and again, don't have a ton of background on where the Kings are at now, but Hiller is their interim head coach. So I think anytime like you have a newer coach that is obviously different than whoever was there before, no matter who he is, like he's gonna have things that he wants the team to do, ways that he wants the team to play, different aspects of culture. He's gonna have his own spin on everything, essentially. And so when that occurs, like there's going to be, I call it like maybe not player pushback, but it's gonna be unfamiliar to some players. So they may not love it right away because it's like this is so different. So on the one hand, like if this is really what Hiller believes is going to work, then I'm not shocked that some of the players might be like, what the hell? This is weird. We don't like it because it's very new still. That's like one view of it. I think the other view of it that I thought of is like, and you have some other points that go down deeper in this, but just from my perspective, like what I felt or what I noticed is like, if they're saying this now in a press conference and not to their coaches or to their GM or owners or whoever is higher up, like essentially why are they doing that? Like, I think going out in the media and saying that is not really like the best way to handle it, I wouldn't say. It's kind of like putting your like staff on blast and just being like, yeah, we don't like this. And it's like for professional hockey players that are above 15 years old, that doesn't seem to be the most mature way to do it. That's on its surface. When I go like a level deeper, what I think of is, were there opportunities for guys like Kempe and Fiala to voice that and say like, we don't love this, or talk about maybe things they don't understand about it, because maybe they don't not love it, they just don't understand it and they don't see the value in it because they don't know it well enough yet. And for me, like it came back to inviting feedback and bringing in opportunities, creating opportunities for really anyone, but in this case players, to talk about things that they do like, that they don't like, that they don't understand, that need to be improved, that don't need to be improved and should stay the same. And where I came to is, if these guys are saying this in a press conference post season, post game, whatever it may be, then there weren't enough opportunities where feedback was possible for them to provide. And this is like last ditch effort kind of thing. Or maybe not last ditch effort, but it's an opportunity to at least just get it out there because it's been bottled up for X amount of weeks, months, and they haven't had the opportunity to say it. And when I think about, last thing I'll say is when I think about why that may be, that's it's just a if it, there's opportunities to invite feedback, whether you're in a playoff run or you're in preseason, there's always opportunities, and it should be important because it does matter what the players think and how they feel. Like, that's going to impact, your team's performance. So I think in a scenario like this, there it may be hard to sit down and have an hour conversation with a guy like Fiala or a guy like Kempe, given everything that's going on. But I think a comment like this shows that it does need to happen. And I do have more on that, but I'll kick it back to you because I know you had some other thoughts that build off that.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to my mind with the whole thing, and we had talked about this in some messaging during the hockey season, so hasn't been aired on the podcast by any means. But it reminds me when Edmonton hired Knobloch midway-ish through this past season, if you're listening live. And the first thing that went through my head at the time was this principle of what David Hawkins calls the critical point. And to give you an example, in any system, in any environment, he uses the example of a really old grandfather clock. And if you've seen any, like, cartoons as a kid, you're probably familiar with like the gears and the inner workings of like Tom and Jerry and his little mouse friends banging around inside of a grandfather clock. But there's a specific point inside of that clockworks that if you touch it, the whole thing will shut down. And he gives a different example of like, you can think of anything, but he gives another example of a locomotive. And there's a certain specific, whether it's a button on there, whether it's an area where if you know what to do or where to push, and this is analogous to players, if you know what to do or where to push or who to push on, that's the most bang for your buck in a system. And it comes back to people are power laws. And there's an asymmetry between if Connor McDavid has a current objection with their previous coach, that matters. If I'm trying to think of a depth guy in Edmonton, you can jump in and help me out if you got one. But if a, I'll use
Corey
Toronto as an
Perry.
example. Go ahead, say again.
Corey Perry was signed late. I don't know that he's exactly a depth guy, but he's probably
Yeah.
not like the center
But let me
depth.
use a different example because everyone will know this guy, Ryan Reeves on Toronto. I'll just switch it for a second and then I'll switch back to Edmonton. But if Austin Matthews has an issue with Sheldon Keefe, that's an issue. If Ryan Reeves takes issue with how like Sheldon Keefe's doing things, it matters less. People are a power law, and Austin Matthews' user experience matters more than Ryan Reeves. Point blank, period. So switching back to Edmonton and this idea of the critical point, Connor McDavid is the critical point of the Edmonton Oilers. So, if his user experience isn't as good as it can be, there is going to be massive, massive destructive, negative effects to his unhappiness or his lack of feeling empowered. So, let me kick that over to you, and then I can jump back in if you have thoughts.
Well, so when you're looking at this example, for the Kings, like Kempe and Fiala being their top two players and
Right.
leading point scorers, like those guys are, their experience matters more than some other guy down the depth chart in and out. It's not that it's not that guys aren't important, but that it's not equal. And I guess the way I look at it is like if you have at the top, whether it's McDavid with your example or with the Kings, Kempe and Fiala, that's one guy in McDavid and two, obviously, with the Kings. you could still have 10 other guys that are, call them depth forwards or defensemen or backup goalie, even your starting goalie. They could all be on board, but it just takes those two or one guys to like, and I don't want to call it derail because it's not, I don't think it's like a malicious thing done by players, but it's going to undermine what you're trying to do. And it's never really going to allow it to be as successful as it could be, because you're always going to be fighting these guys with a lot of influence and a lot of power in the room that don't want to do whatever it is that you are either preaching or trying to get the team to do. And from a coach's perspective, at least in my opinion, and I don't never coached the NHL, so I don't know. But I look at this and I say, if you fight that, if you fight Kempe and Fiala, if you fight McDavid, like in the history of, call it the game, you usually lose. Very seldom are coaches going to win that battle. Be it right or wrong, that's how it is. And quite honestly, like McDavid has to go out there and make the plays. Kempe and Fiala have to go out there and produce for the team. So in a lot of ways, I think the players, I think like owners, GMs siding with the players and keeping a player over a coach, in a lot of times does make sense. It's kind of harder to go find, take away, McDavid because he's generational and like one in a million, if more, if not more. But a guy like Kempe or Fiala, like to do that in the NHL, be roughly point of game players on a playoff contending team, like that's pretty hard to go out and find and replace. Whereas as we've talked about before, like you can find NHL coaches are everywhere. The amount that get recycled and reused, and also just new guys that could come up, like you can find that a lot simpler. Now, are you finding a good fit versus just any fit? Who knows? But that's, that's a sidebar. But as far as like, what are you gonna do? Go out and gas the coach like Edmonton did, or gas McDavid? And again, I know McDavid's, you're never gonna do that, but the principle applies across the board. So I think as a coach, like if you have players that feel this way and you recognize, like it doesn't take a genius to figure out that Kempe and Fiala haven't, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it's not an equal, they're not,
Asymmetrical.
yes, thank you, asymmetrical impact on the team. Doesn't take a genius to figure that out. So you probably should try to get those guys on board versus fighting them the entire time. So, and that's not to say that Hiller isn't doing that, but I think that them coming out in the media says something about their ability to have a conversation about this kind of stuff. Maybe the timeline's too short too, and they just haven't yet, and now they are because the season's over. But yeah, that's where I fall with those two.
Yeah, so I learned this lesson coaching the junior team it was probably 5 years ago now, and we were playing a team at a showcase, and the context on this is we wanted and lost out in recruiting to three defensemen that ended up on this Philadelphia team that we were playing. So we're playing them first. We have the most time to prepare. We did a little pre-scouting. We knew a lot about those three players, to throw a term that USHL scouts will love. They were dynamic defensemen, good skaters, and they like to rush the puck and could manipulate forechecks. So we decided to play a certain way and present that to the team after thinking about it a lot. But it doesn't matter how smart the coaching staff is. It doesn't necessarily matter how much time you spent preparing. The best forecheck is the one that the players want to do. And I learned that the hard way, because we present how we're going to change, how we're going to play for this game, unless we need to make an adjustment. But going into the first period, we presented this obviously throughout the week too. And we went over it right before the game, little reminders. And coaching staff walks out of the room. Drew's feeling good about it. And we went out there for the first 20 minutes. And I looked at Todd, and Todd looked at me. and they weren't running the spore check at all. So there's a mutiny on our hands. And we're just sitting there looking at each other for the whole painstaking 20 minutes, like, what the heck is going on? And we get back into the room after the second period. And I'm not kicking trash cans or screaming at them for not doing what I want. It's not my style. I was just like, hey guys, what was that little thing about? And this kid that has asymmetrical pull, this influencer in my room, this Fiala, this Kempe, this McDavid, he stands up and he's like, hey Drew, we thought, or I thought, and then I told the team when you left the room that like that sucked and it was going to be boring and it was kind of stupid and we didn't want to do it. So we didn't do it. And I was like, all right, thanks for letting me know. Like, I appreciate the honesty. And I immediately learned the lesson. I was like, what do you guys want to do? Like, let's talk about it. And that was when like the Eddie Jones question hit me that I've written about, and I can link this article, but I'll kick it back to you after this. The Eddie Jones question is, who do I need on my side right now for this team to go in the right direction?
Had similar experiences as a coach and as a player, honestly. As a player, like being on teams where the coach wants to do something and the leaders on the team, for whatever reason, don't, and will just straight up be like, yeah, we're not doing that. And when you're just like on, in the example I'm giving as a player, like I wasn't a leader, I'm just on a team. So I'm just like, all right, if that's what they're saying, like I guess that's what we're doing. And it's a weird thing when you're a player, you don't realize how much power you actually do have in that regard. Because if you all band together in that sense, not like against the coach, but just like against doing something, you can get it to change. And I've had experiences as a coach too, where we've very similar to what you just described, where we've like really been excited about something and just think like this will work, whether it's like you said, a pre-scout thing or just a system that you want to run 5-on-5 or 6-on-5, 5-on-6, special teams, whatever it might be. And you felt really good about it. You feel like you've taught it well. You feel like it's been, the benefits or like the potential upside has been explained. And then you find out, again, hopefully not at the end of the year. Hopefully it's a quick feedback loop like you did, where it's after the first period. But we found out whenever it is down the line that like, they didn't really believe in this as players. And on one hand, it's like maybe we should have taught it better, but at the same time, it almost doesn't matter how well you teach something if the players don't just intrinsically think it could work and don't see the value in it. It's just it's doesn't matter. You could have the best teaching ever. You could have the best presentation ever. You could actually have the best execution of it in practice too. And if they're not really behind it, it's not going to work. And what it brings me to is a little bit different than the quote that you gave, but like I think a lot of times it's not hard to find people, and I don't even really mean coaches, yes, but just people in general that will say about today's youth that they are, entitled and soft and think they know everything. And all there's a lot of words like that that get thrown around about the younger people today. And I think something that gets lost in all that, and I thought about this just as you were talking, is like what we fail to recognize is that like the youth today, and in some ways, like I feel like a little bit of my, I feel like I missed this. Like I was just a little bit older than this like wave of like whatever new generation. I definitely played with guys and like went to college with guys that were a little bit, 3, 4 years younger than me that absolutely were coached and brought up that way. But I think we've taught that like everyone matters. And that everyone is loved and valued and respected, and they're important. And it's not so much the days of like, I don't know, when I was in juniors or high school and you were playing and like you didn't do well, you just like for the most part, you got your head ripped off, and like you got yelled at, and we conditioned all the time. Like it was just and I don't mean that like the good old days. It's just like that's just how it was. And like no one was sitting there being like, your opinion matters, and like you are valued on this team. It was like, did you play last night? Yes. Okay, you're valued. Were you out of the lineup? Yeah. Okay, you weren't valued. Like it was just that it was very much black and white. And so what I'm getting at with this is like I think in a lot of ways, like this newer generation has been brought up to sort of believe that like they are valued, respected, important. And so this byproduct of like their opinion and their side always wanting to be heard, this is just natural. Like we have created a culture where we've basically told people what you think matters and you are valued, even if you're number 20 of 20 on the roster. And so now everyone is inclined to share their opinion, wants to let you know how they feel, wants to kind of impart their piece on things. And I do see where it can come across as entitled, because you could have, like I'm saying, like you could have your third string or fourth string goalie like telling you how to run practice better. And it's like, what the hell, man? Like just sit in that stop pucks and let me worry about other stuff. But at the same time, like that goalie has been brought up for years. Like I just said, he's valued, respected, and important on the team. So I think as it pertains to what you're saying, I just think it's like a way that this generation gets misconstrued as being soft or not able to handle criticism or whatever. And in reality, I think it's like we've brought the Connor McDavid age kids up to believe that everything they do is important. And so when they share what they think is important, like, why are we shocked?
Yeah, the other thing that it makes me think of, I guess a couple things. Based on what you're like piggybacking right off what you said, your last kind of point. I think once you, and I experienced this as a player, and I'm sure it's becoming more and more popular now, because I think a lot of coaches specifically our age just didn't like how they were coached as players, so they're trying to do things differently. And what happened to me was, it's like once you see the light, you can't go back to the darkness and just be happy with it. I was coached a certain way. If you're familiar with the Power versus Force stuff, if you're on my newsletter, I was coached in force. I was coached militaristically. I'm sure a lot of people listening were coached the same. And I was coached that way from 8 until I was 18. And then I met this guy named Todd and I played for him. And Todd completely changed what was possible for a coach for me. He broke all of the status quo, he broke all of the considered air quotes norms of the times. And he was my introduction to power. And for people that might not be familiar with those terms, you're probably familiar with self-determination theory. And the two parts of power that self-determination theory has in excess are autonomy and relatedness. So you have the freedom to have an opinion, like you were saying. Your opinion matters here. And then relatedness is the connection human to human with the coach. And when you have a force coach, which I think it's not necessarily an old versus young thing, I think it's a if you've chosen to unlearn this or not yet. But there are a lot of coaches at the highest level that I still think are very much coaching without self-determination theory aspects, without players having a say, without autonomy, and definitely without the relatedness and the human-to-human connection required to get the most out of people. And I think you're seeing that with Fiala and Kempe making the comments that they're making, because I'll kick this over to you after this. Like, one of the principles of being like an empowered coach or using self-determination theory, however you want to look at it, is that force creates counterforce, and that's just simple physics. So if you're seeing players speaking out in the media, we talked about, that has to go somewhere. So if they're getting muffled inside of or muzzled inside of the locker room walls, if they're trying to go to their coach or their assistants even and say, hey, we have ideas. Hey, we're not sure about this. Hey, could we try this? And that's falling on deaf ears. That energy has been created. Players are talking about it, and it has to go somewhere. So if their one outlet to get it out is the media, then that's where it goes. So by coaching in force, by being a little bit maybe too ego-driven, not humble enough, not choosing to have a connection with your players on a human-to-human level, that force creates a counterforce. And that's why players end up talking in the media or making comments that you think are immature or whatever. So it's like, again, on the surface, you can say Kevin Fiala is the issue. But I think the deeper issue is there's something culturally going on there that is allowing that to take place. If you have thoughts.
I think on the first part of what you were saying, like I think something that's a lot different now than it was maybe when we were playing, at least at the college level, just in talking to other coaches and knowing how our team is run, like players do have a lot of opportunity for input. Now, I say opportunity because it doesn't mean that the players are dictating everything that's done, and it doesn't mean that they always have something to say. There are plenty of times, again, our team or other teams where players are like, yeah, sounds good. We don't have, a different opinion on this, but there's opportunity where they are being asked, like, what do you think of this? And how do I know? Well, I know what's happening on our team one because I know, but how do I know with other teams? Because you talk to other coaches and they're like, yeah, we got the feedback that they didn't like doing X or they preferred to do Y. And so that just kind of tells you, like, okay, this is happening a lot more now than maybe it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And then the other thing on the back to the Kings thing, like for me, I think of it like, and I said this to you the other day, like, and you kind of hinted at it there, is like it's not to say that maybe this hasn't been a conversation between those guys, those players, and the coaches before. But if it has been, there's nothing has come of it. So I think it's like it's one, what we started with, inviting feedback, but then also like following up or following through on whatever occurred in that conversation. Because I look at it with, just a different example, but whatever it may be, if players come to me as an assistant coach and say, we feel strongly about X, Y, and Z. And I do nothing and I just sit on it. And then they come back and they're like, we still feel strongly about X, Y, and Z. And now we also have this B in there that we feel strongly about. And I do nothing about it. And now I'm not going to keep going. But now you have a fourth, you have the same four, and they add a fifth. And eventually, they're what I think those players would, one of two things would happen. They'd stop coming to me altogether, or they would come to me, and in addition to coming to me, go to one of our other assistant coaches or our head coach or something like that and go like, quote, above my head because they're like, this isn't working. So if these conversations have happened within the Kings organization with this example, then I'm imagining nothing came of it afterwards. And so their next step was trying somebody else, which maybe they didn't try that. They just went right to the media. Maybe they tried that, it didn't work, and now they went to the media about it. But like you said, the ideas are already out there. The opinions are already floating around that like Pandora doesn't go back in the box. So it's out. They've talked about it at some point. And now, like, if the conversations have taken place and no action has occurred, this is next step. And it is shitty. It's shitty to have that come out in the media like that because it looks awkward. It sounds awkward. and it makes you think like what's really going on here. But at the end of the day, like, I don't care if you're a player, I don't care if you work in law, medicine, business, I don't care what field you work in. People want to be around and work with actionable people that will take something and make it happen. And it doesn't mean that you can, if our players come to us and say like, what we would really love is a new pair of skates for every player every year. Like, I'm sorry, we can't do that. Like, we're not made of money. But within reason, taking action towards something that players feel strongly about, or anyone working under you with you feel strongly about. And so with this thing, it's like if steps had been taken, not enough action had followed. So if conversations had taken place, no action followed, and now they're in the media. And that sucks, but be actionable, or be more actionable than previously.
Yeah. Did you ever see that Barry Sanders documentary that I sent
No.
you? Okay. I think you read the article, but a little bit of context. It reminds me what you're saying of this Barry Sanders razor and like the principle that you're articulating essentially is death by a thousand cuts. So if a player comes to you once and says, like you said with your example, we have qualms about XYZ. If you address nothing, it's like a lack of integrity. It's an opportunity to build trust with someone by hearing them out. And even if you only implement X and you still leave Y and Z the way the coaches think it should be done or whatever that ends up being, there's something for them. So it doesn't end up being a cut. And then if they come back with X, Y, Z, and B, like you said, and you do nothing, that's another cut. And eventually, what happened with Barry Sanders is these small cuts of not listening to, again, Barry Sanders, if you guys don't know, one of the best running backs in the NFL ever. And he was the critical point of the Detroit Lions' success back when he played. So without his best, or his best user experience, the Lions were leaving impact on the table. So, what happened with Barry Sanders is, hey, keep this offensive lineman. He's my friend. He's critical to our success. He's also really good at his job. And they let the guy walk. And then they let another guy walk that they needed. And that was his buddy. And all these pieces that were one, made Barry Sanders happy as your best player, but also like contributed to his success. And therefore, because Barry Sanders was the best player on the team, the asymmetrical impact on the actual Detroit Lions success, the accumulation of just not listening to him negatively compounded so much that the fire to play went away and he retired at his peak because he was sick of it. And it was death by a thousand cuts. So the Barry Sanders razor, I'll kick it back to you. Assume your players are closer to quitting than you think they are. And not necessarily quitting the sport, but like you can't tell me Fiala and Kempe were playing at 100% of who they were if they're a little bit checked out of not wanting to play the system. I'll kick it over to you.
Interesting, because there was a different thing that came to mind at first, and then that your last, the razor, and speaking out loud made me think of something else. So I got two kind of things on this, and they
Sure.
both come from the last week was the coaches convention down in Florida, and there was a presentation on like classic or not classic, but surprising transfer portal, and one of the comments was that around 30% of incoming, so assume that's freshmen, but I guess it could be new, like sophomore, junior transfers or grad transfers, whatever. But 30% of new players don't feel comfortable or like at home when they get there. They feel like they're not wanted, they're not valued. Maybe they feel like other players are considered higher priority than them, so they're getting like the short end of the attention stick, whatever it might be. So this guy's point was like, this guy presenting was like, you kind of need to assume that all your players, when they get there, want to leave, because 30% of them do. And it's a little bit nuts to think about. And I certainly think that there are levels to this. And if you are at Denver versus that, like, an Ivy League school. Like, they'll you're Denver because like they're national championship contenders, and Ivy League schools because they're premier academic institutions. Like, it's probably a lower percent than 30, honestly. But regardless, if you had that mindset, as you just said, like, assume your players are closer to quitting. Assume that there's guys in your team that want to leave, and they've only been here 2 months. It's going to force you as a coach, not force you, it's gonna allow you to treat them better and to operate much like you would in recruiting a player that hasn't come here yet, where you check in with them weekly. You want to make sure they know deadlines, they're aware of when they need to get their application in, they're aware of like what campus is like. Hey, come check it out, meet this player, meet this guy, talk to this person. So that was one thing. Where I originally was kind of going down the path of mentally was, there was a round table discussion, and one of the coaches started talking about, and it was actually at multiple coaches that kind of alluded to doing something similar to this, but the one that I remember the best, and I will honestly probably still somewhat butcher it because it was over a week ago now, but essentially this coach, they have leaders on their team, a leadership group, whatever that may mean on any given year. And then that group gets essentially a portion of the team. So say you have five leaders, each leader gets 5 to 6 players, and they'll meet weekly, monthly, whatever it might be. I think it generally sounded like it was a weekly meeting, and they have a printout, a sheet with questions. And there's like 5 or 6 questions that are in this, and the leader runs the meeting, no coaches, and the players provide the feedback to the leader, and then the leader brings it to the coaches, and the coaches look it over. And it sounded like some of the questions are very much culture and just like environment of the team at that point, but also strategically or structurally how the team is feeling from a just a purely hockey standpoint. And what another coach chimed in on this and said that they liked about it was that this allows for players to provide real-time feedback and not have to wait until the end of the season, or not have to wait until the next time they have an opportunity to come to coach's office. And the coach that does this, what they said they liked the most about this is that now there are times throughout the season where it's a Tuesday and you have one of these meetings Tuesday night, and Wednesday you run practice and you implement one of the changes that just came from the night before. And what I loved about it, listening to it, was that it gets to exactly what we're talking about with being actionable. So Barry Sanders is saying, don't freaking trade this guy, and you trade this guy. Like, that's the, or whatever, let him walk. That's the exact opposite of being actionable. There was an action done. It's not the one he was talking about. And with the players in this scenario, it's like, say, for example, the players provided in their to their leader that they hated the way the team was practicing their breakout. Okay, perfect. That was Tuesday. On Wednesday, the team is practicing breakout in an entirely different way. The players know that what they say does matter and can influence what's done because they see real-time changes the next day. And I think that's one of the best ways I've heard, or I've like listened to someone talk about how they implement like real-time changes for their team. Because I don't need to explain this to you or probably anyone that listens, but if you sit down with a player or even five players as a coach and you say, tell me what you do or don't like about what's going on right now, you might get like 50% transparency. But there's going to be things that are withheld because they're going to fear that ice time will be affected, whatever. That's just the nature of like player coach relationship to some degree, not always. But if you have your leader do that, they're going to let it fly. And now it's taken to the coach the next day from the leader, but it's obviously not just the leader that thinks this. So it's an interesting way to, like I said, get real-time feedback, but also implement real-time changes.
Yeah, it goes back to what was that last episode we talked about feedback loops. I think maybe just to throw a bow on this and make it tactical, and then I'll kick it to you for last thoughts. But I think my last thing is, like, if you're not inviting feedback, start. If you are inviting feedback, how can you shorten the feedback loop? Because again, going back to user experience, like you said, if you learn information on a Tuesday and you can implement it on a Wednesday, as a player, how good does that feel? Pretty good, probably. If that was happening in places that I played, I would have liked that. So, one, invite feedback, find ways to do that. Two, if you're doing it, find ways to shorten your feedback loops even more, or take a step in that direction if you have any closing thoughts.
No, the last thing I would say, or I say no, but yes, are just like follow up and follow through. Those are two things that like you're not going to be able to implement all changes or every change, but you can still follow up on them and be like, we're working on it, or like we're looking into it, or even we looked into it and we can't do it. But you just follow up and you at least allow the players to know, like, all right, I know that what I said didn't bring about any change, but at least it was explored. And then follow through on the things that you can, like follow through on them. I think if you pulled, whether it's college, professional, high school, whatever levels, like I think there's a lot of things that probably players ask for that can be implemented. They're not crazy, because a lot, like think of when I was playing, like, or I think of when I was playing, like some of the things that I thought could be implemented, they weren't like over the top crazy ideas. Like they were like an 18-year-old's just idealistic, you know, how this could be nice if we had this kind of thing. So a lot of the requested changes or the ideas probably aren't that difficult to try at the very minimum. And just having that follow through to try to implement them as best you can, I think that goes such a long way with players. Even if it's not perfect or it's not exactly what they had in mind, you followed through on it and you did what you could. So that to me, follow up and follow through are like the two most important things you can do with feedback.
Yeah, good way to wrap it up. Guys, we are up to, drum roll, 14 Spotify followers. When we started season three, we were at like 11. So we're growing. If you just share this with one person that you think could add value, we could maybe grow a little bit faster. But if you think it's valuable, please share it. All jokes aside, or bad jokes. And we will see you on the next one.